Hello and welcome to your weekly dose of the latest sustainability fun news, facts and reviews brought to you by the Green Elephant. This week, a survey finds the top plastic polluters are repeat offenders. 60% of the global economy is at risk of flooding in the next 20 years. Tesla succumbs to the power of animals. And lab-grown chicken, tasty but odd. Joining me to discuss these and more as usual is Russell. Morning, Russell.
Good morning, Mike. I do like the concept that Tesla are going to harness animals for powering their future battery needs.
I'm not sure harnessing is the right word in this context, but
we'll have a look.
We'll find out shortly. Also coming up are our sustainable shopping update, a recommendation of a brilliant book, behind the scenes listener feedback, and of course, fact or fake. We'll also be talking about Poland, Tesco, Mercedes, Wild West, hydrogen, sexy beasts, weather modification, Corona lines, beer crisps and koalas. So, first up today, the Coca-Cola company, PepsiCo and Nestle are ranked as the world's top plastic polluters for the third consecutive year, according to Break Free from Plastics report. So, obviously, an environmental lobbying group, but Break Free from Plastic, have been doing an annual report. This year, their annual initiative involves counting and documenting the brands on plastic waste found in communities across the globe. They collected 346,000 pieces of plastic from 55 countries. In addition, this year's audit took a special look of informal waste pickers, particularly in the global south, and the impact of low-value single-use plastic has on their livelihoods. So really interesting survey, and we'll take a quick trot through the top 10 in a second, but a quote from Greenpeace representative, regional coordinator Abigail Aguilar, who's their plastics campaign regional coordinator, said, it's not surprising to see the same big brands on the podium as the world's top plastic polluters for 3 years in a row. These companies claim to be addressing the plastic crisis, yet they continue to invest in false solutions while teaming up with oil companies to produce even more plastic. And I think that's a really interesting comment, because how many times on this show over the last 6 months have we said, yeah, that's a good story, but it's not enough, or it doesn't smell right, or it's a bit greenwashy, or, you know, there's something a bit
It's a tough thing, to be honest. You looking at the stats, and number one, we mentioned Coca-Cola. In 51 of the 55 countries, they found some plastic, and 13, nearly 14,000 pieces of plastic were found.
Yeah,
but they're one of the biggest companies in the world. And so, yeah, not that I'm trying to defend them, but as in all statistics, where there are, you know, you're not going to find, you know, some local company in 55 countries. And so if you've got a global country that uses any form of plastic, you're going to come to the top of this list.
And I think the other interesting thing about this survey findings is it's maybe a picture of historical success, because you think about the biggest companies and brands in the world now, you're thinking Google and Facebook and Microsoft and those kind of companies, and Amazon. You're not thinking Coke and Pepsi, are you anymore? Because, you know, maybe 30 years ago, though, different story. And
as soon as you start spreading yourself worldwide, you're only going to hit worldwide brands. Nobody, no local company will ever make it into the top, you know, top 100 probably. And so, you know, you're persecuting, that's probably not the right word, but you get to attack the massive multinational multi-country.
But I guess it's historically, you might that's be doing the right things now, but historically, you know, we know 90% of all plastic ever produced is still around.
Yeah.
And so historically, they've still got that footprint of, you know, environmental damage that they've done over the last 100 years.
And we know some of these companies and some of the subsidiaries of some of these companies, because we're looking at big ones in the list.
Do we think there's a responsibility to not only, and I think most of these organizations have made announcements about carbon neutrality and reducing emissions and recycle plastics and all those sorts of things in the next few years. Do we think there's a responsibility on them to do a retrospective cleanup? Or,
well, to be honest, yeah, I do, to a certain extent, at least to support those who are attempting to do the cleanup, even if they don't go off and do something themselves. You know, they could pump some money into the cleaning activities of others, and those, and there's been some great ingenious stuff. You know, yeah. that plastic well in they drop in the ocean, and it, yes, just basically sits there and gets and, plastic, yeah, and then, yeah, they've got a ship that, yeah, processes it on the spot. So there's stuff these people could invest in to get their plastic pollution down.
I guess I agree, really, because their historical profits are based on the fact that they've historically polluted. So, you know, there is, yeah, you know, those profits true. Should be used to pay for the cleanup. But let's give a rundown quickly now of the top 10. I feel like we need a sign of the swinging cymbals. Perhaps we'll put that back. So at 10, we have Perfetti, who are in 24 countries with 465 pieces of plastic. We then have Colgate Palmolive.
Ooh.
Toothpaste last week, 24 countries. Philip Morris International, the cigarette brand, were found in 28 countries. Then at 7, Procter & Gamble, found in 29 countries. Then one every day, it's Mars at 6, found in 32 countries. At 5, Mondelez International, 34 countries. And then Unilever at number 4, found in 37 countries with 5,558 pieces of plastic. And then the big three, and there's quite a big jump. So number 3, Nestle, found in 37 countries with 8,633 pieces of plastic. At 2, we have PepsiCo, 43 countries with 5,155 pieces of plastic. And at 1, the winner, or the loser, depending on your perspective, is Coca-Cola, 51 countries, 13,834 pieces of plastic.
Interesting second place there in PepsiCo, because although, yeah, it was found in the most countries, they only found 5,155, which is actually lower than the position 4 Unilever. You know, the fact that they're spread far and wide is a bigger issue than the fact that the amount of plastic that they populate with, pollute with. So, okay, again, statistics, you can read them any way you like.
Last week, we asked our listeners to subscribe and leave a review on our podcast on your favorite podcast provider, and we're delighted to say that there's a steady trickle of reviews starting to come in. But just a reminder, really, for listeners, that if you do submit a review and we decide it's the best, and again, no clue as to what the best is, then we will be giving out prizes for the best. So you still have a little bit of time to get your entries in. All the details are on the show notes page. So head on across there, have a look, and put your entries in, and the winner will win some swag.
And when you say show notes, you mean on the...
on the Green Elephant site. Yeah, greenelephant.show.
Okay.
Yeah, so head across there, and or you could just leave a review on your podcast provider. Quite simple to do. They've all got to review this podcast area.
Brilliant.
So go and do that, and there'll be some goodies wending their way to one lucky winner, just in time for Christmas, maybe. Next, on to our challenge update. Sustainable seasonal shopping. So I have to admit, I'm a little bit behind on my shopping for my holiday season. And
you're in the rest of the world, I think.
I'm going to be in a little bit of a scramble to get it all done in time. How about you? Are you on top of it, Russell?
Well, you know, me, the great fan of Christmas,
yeah,
as you know me to be,
yes,
well known as Scrooge in the office,
yes,
or the Grinch to my family. I like giving presents. So I'm a bit of a sucker for present giving. So I get any opportunity. But yeah, I'm okay. But we, as I said last time, that we got kind of a secretly open Santa arrangement. So one, to keep costs down, and two, to keep the number of presents down. and to get the quality of the present up that you do receive. And so it feels a little bit more family and it's nice. So yeah, and we're trying our best to not use any single use plastics and reduce our wrapping and such like.
Are you a good present receiver?
I think I express my joy, but there is more pleasure in giving than there is in receiving.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. But yeah, so from my point of view, I've done a few secondhand things now. So that seems to be one direction of travel. I mean, secondhand, not in kind of completely tatty and shoddy and not, but yeah, you know, there's some quality secondhand things. Yeah. And a few digital things. I talked about a few digital books last time, but there's a couple of subscription-based things. So, you know, hopefully the impact of those is fairly minimal in terms of sustainability. So that's kind of going the right way. We have a few different shows coming up over the next few weeks, more on which later, but we'll be sharing more sustainable shopping tips over the next couple of weeks. Also a bit later in the show, we've had some good response to our request for tips from listeners, so we'll be discussing some of those. But next week, I think, is the 16th of December, and we got a bit of a Christmas special show, so we'll be bringing you our top 10 tips for a sustainable Christmas. So that's one to listen
perhaps
out for.
Can I throw a tip in on how to survive Christmas or three?
What, right the, now?
I'll do that as part of the 10. A survival tip for those that perhaps don't perhaps roll around in Christmas as much as others do. I mentioned last week about the more sustainable wrapping technique that I come across. So if everyone wants to look up, or we'll put a link to perhaps some of the videos that are out there about furushiki, which is the Japanese art of wrapping presents with fabric. And it doesn't, that sounds like it could be more expensive, but the idea is that wrapping paper lasts, or that wrapping fabric lasts forever. And also it's so much easier to wrap stuff, and you don't use sellotape, and you don't need a ribbon, and it's just all the rubbish that goes on people's present wrapping.
Right. So, recommendation for the week, and we've mentioned a few times. There's a comic strip in the Guardian newspaper called First Dog on the Moon, and often talks about environmental issues. But they've published a book. It's called The Carbon Neutral Adventures of the Indefatigable Enviro Teens. Easy for me to say. and it's all about climate change and what this group of unlikely superheroes does to address some of the issues. So we've got Binky, the monotrim or something. Worried Norman. Once bitten by a radioactive croissant and now a pastry person. And Letitia, an occasionally bossy science wombat and genius inventor. So it's completely mad. It's really easy to read. There's a lot of kind of pictures and graphics in there. So it's a really, really good fun. But this group of people, they're the Enviro Teens, and they get very, very, very angry about single-use plastic. So it's all about their adventure to stop impending plastic disasters. They meet Senator Ian, the climate denialist potato. it's absolutely, absolutely brilliant. So if you want a good laugh about some serious issues, which, you know, that's what we try and do here on the show, it's absolutely well worth checking out. So
yeah, and he also find some of his cartoons on firstdogonthemoon.com.au. So
yes. We'll put a link to
hop there to give you an idea.
Yeah, we'll put a link to the book and to the cartoons. So they're really great fun. So go and have a look at those. Flooding now, and there's been many stories about flooding this year, but the facts are that almost 60% of the global economy and 40% of the global population are going to be exposed to flooding in the next 20 years by 2040. Whilst more than a third of today's agricultural land will be under high water stress. And this is according to a new report. It's between Moody's, who are a very well-respected credit ratings agency, and a company called 427. They've assessed the exposure to flood, heat stress, hurricanes, typhoons, rising sea levels, and water stress across the piece. So it used to be 20 years ago, flooding was maybe a Southern Asian problem, and there was the odd typhoon, which we might have heard about, but in the main, it wasn't an issue. But more and more, every single area of the world is experiencing flooding and extreme weather events, and this is only going to get worse over the next 20 years. And so the purpose of this report really was to highlight these risks to potential investors, which, you know, that's interesting, but it just presents a much wider global issue for everybody, really. How are we going to deal with this flood risk?
Yeah, and there's only so much you can do to defend a whole country from flooding. You know, I live in an area next to a river, fortunately high enough to not be in the current floodplain, but you'd have to look at it and go, there's going to be a time where that river could be quite encroach on me because it's a tidal river. And if tides are going to get higher and all that kind of stuff, then it starts to become a bit of a worry, even for me, away from the coast and a little bit elevated. But where some of this, some of these lands, like, especially when you think of places like the Maldives, which are, you know,
low-lying anyway,
they're very low-lying, and they'll just lose a whole island with a couple of feet of extra water. So yeah, it's a significant concern. And as you say, it's been increasing regularly.
Well, just to put it in numbers of people, number of people by 2040 exposed to damaging floods is predicted to rise from 2.2 billion to 3.6 billion. So it's 1.4 billion extra people being exposed to dangerous, damaging floods, which is a bonkers number. It's not just these, you know, stories that we talk about every week. So there's been another flood and there's another flood, whatever. It'll almost become meaningless to talk about another flood in the future because there will be so many.
It's, you know, how many earthquakes are going around the earth at any one time? And we only, and there is a 6.01 in China, I think, this week.
Okay.
Big.
Yeah.
Heard about it?
Nope.
On the news?
No,
it's because there's hundreds of them. It's because there's absolutely hundreds of them. And you're right. It's going to come down to people. It's going to be a large number of people have to die before anybody pay attention to a story nowadays. So it is likely to become that news story anathema of the future, there was lots of flooding, but, you know, nobody died. So, you know, let's move on to the one where it killed people. And it's a bit, and it was interesting that when you said about the over a third of today's agricultural area will be subject to high water stress. Now that's an interesting issue because essentially you have a flood, and then as the flood runs away, it rips all the topsoil away, and so you end up with essentially soil that's been ripped clean of its top nutrients and its top soils. This could be devastating for our ability to grow food.
Yep.
Which is kind of key.
And back to the original point, it's not just about the finance of the thing.
No, it's the impact on the people and the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. So some other big sustainability news stories from the week. And first up, we have the AWS standard. And if you are into tech as we are, we thought this was Amazon. Well, I thought this was Amazon Web Services, but it's not. Having looked into this, it's Poland Spring, who are a bottled water manufacturer, announcing that all of its factories are certified under the Alliance for Water Stewardship International Water Standard. So that
somebody should have thought that through.
They should have done that. So sounds like a good thing. So they've achieved platinum rating. It means that they are supporting positive impact in the region where they are. It means ongoing monitoring of the impact and the geology, an area from where the water is being taken, and engaging with your community in which you're taking the water from. So it's an interesting standard. I am skeptical at this stage as to whether all those communities in Maine who have been engaged and whose rocks have been surveyed and whose nearby factories have been certified to a standard are happy with this situation. So it's a really, really interesting standard that says, here's your water stewardship standard, but what about the stewardship of the people and of the planet? It's not just about how you're looking after the water. So interesting.
And the picture on the article, the picture on the article does picture five vulnerable sized plastic bottles.
Yeah, very.
Not wanting to poke sticks at another subject. Yeah. Moving on to some motoring, Mercedes-Benz has got something called Ambition 2039.
It's a catchy title, that, isn't it?
So catchy, I couldn't say it. Yeah. And again, as soon as I saw 2039, I kind of went, that's a long way away. It's near 19 years away, but maybe they aren't being aggressive enough. But actually, reading into it, it's quite interesting. They are saying that, jumping to one headline date is that the Mercedes-Benz own plants, including the global battery production network, will produce on a CO2 neutral basis worldwide already from 2022.
Mm.
Now, I thought that was quite a good headline. They didn't go with that as much. They said it's about the whole fleet. And when you look into it, it is about the fact that they are driving. They've got about 2,000 suppliers.
Yep.
And they are trying to get every one of those suppliers to produce to them carbon neutral output.
It was a really interesting story, this, because
rarely
do we see companies underplaying what they were doing. And I think this was one of the really rare examples of 2039. It's kind of okay, but they're doing a whole lot of stuff a lot sooner and, putting it out across their whole supply chain and making sure they reduce the footprint of all the components and materials they're using, not just some parts of it. And it looked like a really comprehensive plan. And there were, as you say, there were so many better headlines they could have pulled out of this.
Yeah, within 20 years.
But so well done, Mercedes.
You
actually maybe get somebody to write your headlines for you.
Yeah, you perhaps need to look at your marketing supplier as well.
One company that doesn't need a new marketing supplier is Tesco. They're boasting about removing 20 million items of plastic from its Christmas range this year, including crackers, lights, cards, and the packaging from puddings as a part of a drive to reduce plastic pollutions. But it seems to be that it's own label products, so it's not... pushing down onto supply chains. It's just doing, its own stuff. It's taking glitter out as well, which we know is
disastrous.
Little bits of plastic. But it sounds like a good number, doesn't it? 20 million. But if you think about how many
it's basically one per shopper.
one per shopper, and out of one product, and each product might contain, four or five different bits of single-use plastic. So as good as the Mercedes, or as bad as the Mercedes headline was, this one is bad for another reason, in that it's seeking to be impressive when perhaps it isn't.
Well, let's go to something a little bit more positive. see if we can pick holes in this one. I don't think we can. Scotland is to become one of the first country to test 100% green hydrogen in heating 300 Scottish homes. Mm-hmm. So, and they're moving to roll this out, and they're installing these heating systems in each of these 300 houses. And we know Scotland can be pretty remote, so having a system that is self creating its own energy source in the form of electrolyzing hydrogen, and then producing heat from that, so it can then heat your house. It seems bonkers that we haven't done it before, but obviously there's always been challenges with hydrogen. Electrolysis is not the most efficient thing yep. to do, because it takes energy in itself, and therefore you lose some of the energy that you then manage to create. But I think generally we need to do this kind of stuff. They're going to have this for 3 or 4 years, these heating systems in. This isn't a short term, hey, we'll bung them in 300 and we'll start rolling them out to the rest of the households next week. This is, you know, a long study to work out whether 300 small bombs go up in around Scotland or that it work, you know, it actually does reduce their consumption of gas, which is obviously the main way that we heat houses in the UK.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing. And, you know, we know that fossil fuels and nuclear perhaps aren't the future. And anything that looks at the alternatives has got to be a good thing.
And moving on from heating Scottish housing to subscribing to your car instead of buying it or renting it. And a White Star Capital has invested in Finn Auto, who are allowing people to subscribe to their car instead of owning it and offsetting their CO2 emissions. And they've raised this a healthy starter fund of $24 million or €20 million, are looking to start that.
Okay,
unique way of subscribing to your car.
I've seen a Volvo do a car subscription.
Do they
service? But what they don't do, which Finn Auto seem to be doing, is in the cost of what you're buying, they are offsetting the emissions of the vehicle as well. So you not only get the car, you get some offsetting as well as part of your price. So
And of course with Volvo, presumably that is for Volvo cars, but this is Audi, BMW, Citroen, Jaguar, Land Rover. some of those you would attach to some of the least ecologically friendly vehicles.
Yeah. But be interested to see the price when it comes out, because the Volvo one is really expensive to pay as you go, use your car. Anyway,
that tells a story in itself.
If you do go with an electric vehicle, then you'll really want to go to somewhere like the UK's first electric-only car charging station. Now, I saw this one a few months ago coming down under construction and coming down the road, and it's an amazing location. So think of a motorway service station, but when you pull in, you've got all the usual amenities, somewhere to eat, somewhere to get a drink, toilets and so on. But they're all very eco and sustainable, and, you know, very conscious of their footprint. The whole site is covered in loads of solar. They've got huge battery storage so that they can take the solar and store it. And instead of a petrol station, it is just loads and loads of bays to park your electric car in. And they've got kind of lanes for different powers of charge, because depending on the make and model and age of your car, you need a different amount of kilowatt hours to be put into your car at any one time with a different kind of adapter. So they've got bays for all these different types of cars. So you can pull in, put your car up to charge, have a nice coffee, have a nice drink, and pull away again, all set up really, really nicely for electric cars. Basically all generated themselves. They have a fail back to the national grid, but it seems like they're, if anything, going to be giving power into the grid and not taking it away. So,
And that seems that's there now, is it?
It is open, ready to use. So, all renewable.
It is near Essex.
Well, I guess these things will roll out across the country in time. But great to see the first one there.
And carrying on the electric car theme, we look at Tesla. Now,
Tesla, we know to be,
you know, champions of the electric car, but they've been stopped in their tracks by a bunch of lizards and snakes that have been holding placards, presumably. I think they have. I'll actually see a snake holding a placard, to be honest. I think by proxy, there's been some intervention here because they've been stopped in their tracks from cutting down 205 acres or 83 hectares of pine trees for building this gigafactory near Berlin.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were intending to start rolling out 500,000 cars a year off that, that line next year, starting. Mm. But this conservation issue has raised the fact that they are damaging habitats of protected species. Land lizards and smooth snakes.
Yeah, this is smooth snakes. This is really interesting because I think I read that Tesla are looking to build gigafactories on every continent and to, you know, really ramp up production because the demand is there. But it doesn't kind of sit with their we're electric vehicles and therefore have we got any kind of eco or sustainability ethos or ethics? This feels like a huge global corporation just rolling in, deforesting, and just, you know, as bad as any traditional company. I don't see anything here that says we Tesla are, you know, looking to do the right thing for the planet and the environment. It seemed that it was just we're just commercial, and it just so happens that our product is electric vehicles, but we're not actually that interested in the planet. And it was a
It is an interesting one. And funnily enough, when you see the picture of the, if you go to our show site, we'll post a link to this story, which we got from The Guardian. And there's a picture of Elon Musk and one of his people behind him, both with their arms crossed. They look the most defensive you've ever seen. He's usually fairly relaxed. So this whole site is still on provisional construction as well. So they haven't actually issued formal rights to build it. They're doing everything on risk at the moment. So they're taking some chances in perhaps running a little bit roughshod over the process.
Yeah.
That's there for a reason.
So last week, we had some terrible singing from myself when we were talking about the Eat Just who have done the lab grown meat, and it's now for sale and you can go and eat it.
Are you not going to sing again, eh?
I'm not, no. You're safe from that. And this week, people have been eating this lab-grown meat, and apparently the lab-grown chicken, who would have thought it, tastes like chicken. But the feeling when eating it is more complicated, apparently. Apparently, eating one of these reminds you of a Happy Meal. it seems that in the mouth, it's not quite what you would think. So, you know, the deep fried chickeny nature of a nugget, you know, crispy and salty and, you know, slightly chickeny. But it was apparently biting and chewing through it was. So
yeah,
jury is really out on that one.
To be honest, at the time that the nugget was worth a lot of money as well. I think it cost $50.
What, the single nugget was $50?
Would you pay $50 for a nugget? A
single nugget.
Yeah. Presumably, costs will fall when mass production. I'd sooner not have meat than have lab grown.
And I think that was the feedback when we discussed this last time. And I think a lot of work to be done on not just the taste, and you can do lab grown meat, but the whole experience around that kind of product.
So let's go back to animals because we like our furry friends, and apparently that's a problem.
What, liking furry friends?
Well, liking the furry and feathery friends, because apparently we only invest, or a lot of the conservation projects around the world tend only to invest heavily where we like the animal. So the animal ironically get the lion's share. These charisma animals get the ironic lion's share of EU funds. People don't want to save the spider. You know, they put it under a cup and shove it outside. They don't they don't want to spend money on it, and they don't want to, you know, save snakes and other invertebrates and perhaps secure lands which are breeding grounds for, I don't know, mosquitoes and other things. But the thing is that as much as you invest in brown bears and Eurasian lynxes, who are deemed to be the Hollywood stars of European conservation, which I don't like that.
Furry.
Shouldn't that be the Pinewood Studio stars of a European conservation?
No. I don't know.
But they are the they're the ones that are getting the money. They're by a massive amount that we're just not investing in the stuff. And the thing is, things like insects, we know, are important to our conservation and to our biodiversity and to our survival, and people aren't investing in making sure that we secure them, unless they're furry, which of course you save the bumblebee. You're prepared to invest in that. So it seems to be a furry, creepy, crawly related
kind of feels like it needs to be on merit and on need rather than how furry and strokeable is the animal.
And that's exactly what they're saying, is it that a lot of these ones, you know, you're securing a large amount of funds for a disproportionate amount of conservation importance. Eurasian lynxes could go extinct. It would be dreadful. We know that species are going extinct massively at the moment. But if the common insect gets thrown to the wall, we all die. So I think it's a rebalancing needs to be made there.
China now, and last week we were gushing over China and their speed and agility and just introducing new single plastic reporting laws at the drop of a hat, which was great. However, this week China is planning a rapid expansion of its weather modification program. And for 60 years, the communist nation has used military aircraft and anti-aircraft guns to put silver iodide or liquid nitrogen into clouds to get them to produce rain or snow. And they do this ahead of apparently major events, make sure there's not a drought before the Olympics or before any major anniversaries. So kind of just engineering their climate to, make it look good when it matters.
There's no risk there, is there?
No.
There's no risk in doing this.
But they're looking to expand this program. And okay, they might be using a bit more technology in the way that they decide where and how to deploy it. But, it just seems like there's all sorts of onward
It's almost
issues
Bond
with this, isn't it?
It's the making of a Bond movie in there somewhere. Hold on, perhaps they've already done it.
Yeah,
they do weather modification, don't know. I'm going to drag us kicking and screaming back to animals again.
Okay,
crying out loud. If you keep on going with this series, I'm going to go back to lions at Barcelona Zoo who have been tested and have found that they have contracted coronavirus.
Oh.
They had mild symptoms, and so they were tested, and lo and behold, they join a set of lions and tigers that were also found positive in the Bronx Zoo in New York. It is clearly provable that things are jumping backwards and forwards between different animals.
So we're going to vaccinate the human population, and we're going to have to vaccinate the entire animal kingdom as well.
Well, at the moment, it seems that cats seem to be the most prone, didn't they? With lions and tigers being at the top of the list. Yeah. But it makes you wonder if you're going to stop the spread, you're going to have to stop the animals spreading it around.
Staying on Corona, because we've talked about Corona bottles from the 70s where you take them back to the off license and you get your 5p return fee. We've discussed this a number of times and said, well, what a great idea. Why don't we do that now? And there is a pilot scheme to do that right now. And instead of glass bottles, it's plastic bottles. So I think they've got this on the continent in many places, but in the UK, it's taken an age to arrive and it's well past time. But good news this week, that in Wales, the Welsh government in Conwy, they are setting up some device machines where you can go and take your plastic bottles and 20p a time. to return plastic bottles. So,
wow, that's way overdue. I mean, to be honest, you can imagine what we used to do is you used to find a Corona bottle in the bin, and you used to take it to the newsagents because didn't matter. You know, you had to make no proof of purchase. You just found a Corona bottle and went, "Oh, that's like 5p on the ground," in the days when 5p was worth something. Yeah. let's go back to. Oh no, it's not animals. Let's look at the deer, beer and crisps, the delight that we've regularly been not allowed to enjoy down the pub, and have had to make do with our own. But apparently, nothing beats beer and crisps. I can't remember myself. And what Walkers have done in liaison with a local brewery, or is they have managed to install an anaerobic digester which takes the potato waste from their crisps, okay. How American of me, to bacteria to produce some useful methane. They then use the methane to cook their crisps.
Okay.
And then when what's left is a potato cake, which in itself sounds delightfully tasty, but I'm guessing it isn't. And they stir that in with CO, the brewery CO2 to make an enriched fertilizer, which helps put the carbon back in the soil. And therefore, and they're putting that on potato crops, and they have done this year, and they're planning to roll this out to many more of their plants over the coming
Walkers,
time.
I guess we need more of organisations working together. I guess it's how Marmite was discovered, wasn't it?
Was it?
It was an offshoot of some brewery process. So you know, organisations working together to do things is always a good story.
And waste is not always waste. We need to look at that.
Absolutely. B Corp spotlight now, and we are delighted to learn this week that PR and communications specialist Wild West has become a certified B Corporation. Great news, local company, like to give them a mention. Offices in Truro and Bristol in the UK. They've got many high profile customers, so go and check them out. But this week they've taken a year to go through their certification process. It is onerous, but they're growing a growing group of businesses in Cornwall in the UK. We're becoming a bit of a B Corp kind of hub, really, aren't we?
And it's the Southwest is outside of London. Southwest in the UK is one of the biggest groups of B Corp. Yep. So the Southwest is becoming the peninsula for sustainability in the UK.
And Georgie Upton, who is a friend of a friend, has said that B Corp is a business game changer for us. Our mission is to do better business brilliantly. And that's what B Corp is for them. So
B Corps are working to be a force for good, and that is a great thing to aim for.
Listener feedback now, and we discussed the new law in China on single-use plastic, and there were lots of people got back to us and said that's a brilliant thing. So love Earth, go green, no more waste from India, evolve creative, and lots of others thought that was a brilliant first thing. But I guess the biggest talking topic of the week was simple, sustainable shopping, and we're going to give more tips on that next week. Salty Surf Co. Love the list, but reported that all of their products passed the checks that we put out. So go and check them out. Yep. Sustainably G also added something which I think say a lot, which is before you buy something, think, do I really need it? Because if you don't need it, well, don't buy it.
I expect when it comes to Christmas, does the person we're buying it for really need it? Or are we just making a difficult returns choice, or them having to awkwardly put it out every time we go around to visit?
speaking of sustainably, G, I think Geraldine's her real name. But she told us she was making a vegetable lasagna. I think there was some meat-based story. And I think she was making it whilst listening to the show. So that's interesting. Lasagna and sustainable podcast show. But I said to her, well, maybe you should try baked beans in your lasagna. Have you ever tried that, Russell?
I, No, I haven't.
I think it's a cooking treat that everybody should try once in their life is a baked bean lasagna. But apparently they're not big on baked beans in France. So
what can we say? You French people, sort yourselves out. You know, we are culinary experts here. What do you think you are?
Yeah. But authentically grounded offered, I guess, maybe the best sustainable shopping tip, which was the most sustainable choice is the one you already have.
Yes.
Yeah. We did a few things on meat and farming this week. We had the kind of that 1% of farms owned by 70% of 70%
of land run by 1% of farmers.
And there was loads of people that just kind of went route one on these stories and said, you know, took the vegan option, the kind of the perceived right option. Meat is bad, shouldn't do it, shouldn't eat it, kind of thing. Which, you know, that's okay. Great.
Yeah.
But there was some really great conversation with apologies for pronunciation of this, Sigkar Venison, and I apologies, look in the show notes if you want to see how to say that. Terrible pronunciation, but made some really interesting points about, you know, having a connection to meat. And if you know where it's been farmed, you know, perhaps you've raised it at home and you've treated it with love and respect, and then you've used it at home and you've eaten it at home, and it's not been mass produced or factory produced, then perhaps, you know, meat in that way is better than, say, you know, mass-produced soy, which is responsible for huge deforestation, or other mass-produced crops. So I think it's really interesting to get those opinions, because it isn't always...
It is, and of course, you know, throwing back that, or that not all farming is meat farming. A lot of the farming that vegans are interested in is the making of vegetables, and if still the same case that 1% of farm owners run 70% of the world's land, that means essentially... vegans are buying from the richest people and the richest corporations who don't care so much about the environment anyway.
Yeah, right.
We know.
So behind the scenes now, and this week, just wanted to give you a brief preview on what is coming up on the Green Elephant Show over the next few weeks as we enter the holiday season. We are going to ensure that we keep you suitably informed and entertained. So Russell doesn't know this. He's a surprise for him. Next week we are doing a Christmas special. So I want your best festive mood on next week, Russell. So we're going to do...
I'm going to bone up on my Scrooge and Grinch impressions.
So we're going to talk about some sustainable shopping tips. We've got some... Christmas products that we're going to be talking about, and generally a festive theme for next week's show. The week after, we are going to do a review of sustainability in 2020, look at some of the big stories, some of the big themes, and discuss those issues. And then as we go into the new year, we are going to do a bit of a preview of what's coming up and what's happening in 2021. So plenty to think about and talk about over the next few weeks. Dun, dun. It's now the best time of the week for Russell.
Oh, yes.
He's trembling, but it is fact or fake.
He doesn't have to tremble too much because, you know, he's well in the lead.
Well, I've got a good feeling this week. I think I'm going to do well. And it's given that we had the story about the top three plastic polluters, I thought we would do some plastic pollution themed fact or fakes.
Okay.
So we've got lots of beaches in the UK, but on average, there are 150 plastic bottles on every mile of UK beaches. Is that fact or fake?
You know, depressingly enough, and I know we're lucky we live down in Cornwall, some of the cleanest beaches around, but I would suggest that on average falls a little short. So I'm going to say that's fake.
You're very pessimistic, but no, it's actually a fact. I mean, 150 bottles on every mile. That's a lot of bottles.
It's pretty grim anyway, but yes. I was erring on the side of devilish person.
Okay. Well, it's things are getting better. Lots of countries like China, Australia, Ireland, Bangladesh have banned single-use plastic bags. But if you are caught producing, using, or selling plastic bags in Kenya, you can be imprisoned for 4 years. Is that fact, or is it fake?
To be honest, I hope it's a fact.
You're going fact?
Yes.
It's true. If you Good. Are using a plastic bag in Kenya, you can be put in prison for 4 years. So anybody going to Kenya for their holiday next year,
yeah, watch
don't
yourself.
Take a plastic bag.
don't take a plastic bag to put your dirty knickers into.
Yeah, yeah. So in its entire life, the average plastic bag is used for just 22 minutes. Is that fact or is it fake?
Well, that's very difficult. But on the basis, they tend to just carry your shopping home on average. Yeah, I'd have to say that's a fact.
It's actually a fake. It's a lot shorter than that. It's actually 12 minutes. The average use in its entire life of a plastic bag is 12 minutes. It's just bonkers, isn't it?
Well, stop buying them, people, for crying out loud.
And staying on plastic bags, each and every US resident uses 1,200 plastic bags a year. It's almost four a day, but 1,200 plastic bags a year for every US resident.
Yeah, it's intriguing. So you haven't been to the US, have you?
I have, yes.
You have? Oh, right. Missed out on that particular anecdotal story.
Yes. I'll fill you in later.
But in the they do like their paper bags in their supermarkets and such like. So I'm going to say that's a fake.
It's actually a fact.
Is it?
It is. Every person, every resident uses 1,200 plastic bags a year. And finally, for fact or fake this week, ocean plastic now. For each plankton particle in the ocean, there are 10 plastic ones.
Oh.
Is that fact or fake?
Wow. On the basis that a child can consume 1 million pieces of microplastic in a single hot drink from the bottle, as we reported a little while ago, I'd have to say that's probably disappointingly a fake.
It is disappointingly a fake. It's actually close to 50.
Yeah.
48 particles of plastic for every particle of plankton. That's bonkers.
That's mad.
It is.
Well done.
Thank you. You were right.
I won. Did far
at
better.
Last. And finally, before we go, when the McCormicks came home on Wednesday, the Christmas tree in their Adelaide house had acquired a new ornament, one very unexpected ornament. A wild and somewhat confused koala. They went in and this teenager said, I think the dog went straight to the Christmas tree and was sniffing around mum and thought it was a bit weird. There were baubles all over the floor. She looked up and there was a koala in the tree. So they phoned up their local koala rescue center and they said, there's a koala in our Christmas tree. And the rescue centre said, yeah, come on, pull the other one. It's a soft, cuddly toy. So it's taken them quite a while to persuade them that there is a koala in our Christmas tree.
But yeah, it's brilliant.
The mother said, I thought, is this a joke? I thought one of my kids had put a soft toy in there. But no, it was a live one. And as with anything these days, she recorded a TikTok video which went viral of a koala in a Christmas tree. So everybody be careful.
They're very cute. They are very cute, but they have the most vicious claws. Horrendous claws they got on them.
Anyway, if you've enjoyed the show, please do go and visit the show page at greenelephant.show. There you can find links to all the stories we've discussed, instructions on how to leave us a review, and links to find us on all the usual podcast providers. Please do go and visit and review, as it really helps to continue to make the show and hopefully keep you entertained. So hopefully, see you at greenelephant.show or on social at greenellipod. But until next time, thanks for listening, and we hope you have a sustainable week.